races are really off. Horse races are really off. Dog meat coming in first, second, third, and fourth. Dog meat coming in fifth, because that's the track of the racehorse. I'll bet you that's the track of the racehorse.
Horse racing is really off, says Vegan Smythe. And I'd tend to agree with him, as would my guest today, Elio Cialotto of horseracingkills.com. We tend to think of horse meets as sophisticated and glamorous affairs. Isn't it called the sport of kings? But as we plan our day out to the races or have a bit of a flutter on a horse, I wonder if we spare a thought for the countless animals who are forced into an unnatural life of fear and suffering, only to become waste products when their bodies can no longer cope with the physical demands of the so-called sport. It is indeed a sorry affair, which we'll discuss in a little bit more detail shortly. You're with Sandra Kyle, that's me. The show is Safe and Sound. We're New Zealand's only animal rights program, broadcasting right throughout the country and available to download as a podcast from accessradio.org, iTunes, Free FM, or our Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. We're going to begin today's program with an update on the possum story we featured last week, when Nini Tullock told us about the Drury School possum hunt that she attended and how she saw young teenagers taking joeys out of the pouches of their dead mothers and drowning them in a vat of water. Lindley documented this, made it available on the internet, and also started a petition. So, Lindley, as a result of your activism, a wider public conversation has begun.
Yes, it has done, around the issue of possums in New Zealand and thinking about the way in which they're demonised and how that has led to cruelty towards them on many different levels, and how that cruelty goes around unquestioned. I'd still like the discussion to be broadened out even further, because I don't think people are necessarily making the connection here. The point is that the possums in New Zealand, they get poisoned with 1080. The Key government put in this predator-free by 2050 vision last year in July. It's all out, and it's sort of very unquestioned in New Zealand because the possums have become demonised. But what is actually happening is this: we know 1080 is an incredibly cruel poison to use and that it causes animals immense suffering. And so what about the joeys in their pockets as well? Pouches, pockets. What happens to these joeys when the mothers are poisoned with 1080? They die a very slow and lingering death, and secondary poisoning through perhaps dogs eating the pellets, unintentional consequences of this 1080. We know that cows can eat the pellets and die from it. We know that horses can. We know that dogs can. Mammals are highly susceptible to it. We don't have the kind of research actually that we should have around its safety for humans and the environment and for other animals in the environment, including our native birds. So there needs to be a lot more attention paid to this and not just a wholehearted acceptance of it.
And Lindley, how's the petition going now?
Well, the petition is now sitting at 10,500 people, and we wanted to reach 10,000. We're going to present it to Parliament in the not-too-distant future. I've got the support of the Jane Goodall Institute. A member of the Jane Goodall Institute has offered to come with me to present it at Parliament.
The Jane Goodall Institute, because of Jane Goodall's program, the Roots and Shoots program, are very concerned about how activities like school possum hunts affect young, impressionable children.
That's exactly the point. And if we can get programs like SAFE's educational program and Roots and Shoots into the schools, this is something that we're looking towards. So it's not just, let's just ban school possum hunts. What a lot of advocates and educationalists are wanting to do is to actually think about how we can provide quality educational materials for schools, for them to develop compassionate education with children. No, the petition's going very well, and we've had a lot of news coverage. It's gone international. There is a lot of condemnation around what happened.
So let's hope that a lot of good things come from this. Time has gone again. This is just a very quick update. I'd like you to tell me about the billboard.
So the billboard is up now at the corner of Tristram Street and Collingwood.
Right in the middle of
town,
Hamilton.
Yeah, just around the corner from the vegan buffet.
Right.
Yes. So, you know, you can have a look at the sign and then go down and get some nice, peaceful food.
So tell us what the sign says.
It says, every year in New Zealand, 2 million bobby or millions of bobby calves are killed just so people can drink their mum's milk. Mm. Ditch dairy, go vegan. So it is a very strong statement. It's clear. It's bright pink and you can see it on our website. And I know it's on the Safe and Sound website as well. We're really proud of it. It's been magnificent achievement.
A lot of cars go by.
We got some publicity for it as well. Look, it's just really important to have that kind of awareness developing tools at our disposal, because bobby calves obviously is one of my primary activist platforms, and they can't speak for themselves,
no helpless animal can. Lindy, I have a final question. Where do you get your energy?
Well, of course, you know, Sandra, I'm vegan, so it goes without saying that I have got plenty of energy. I'm just a little power ball.
Okay, you certainly are. Okay, Lindy, we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Thanks. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
When I hear galloping hooves, I think not only of modern horse racing events, but the history we have shared with the horse going back thousands and thousands of years. We've ridden on their back, used them as pack horses. How many millions of them would have died in battles and warfare over the centuries? Just today I watched a film that was set in medieval China at a time where there were many wars and skirmishes, all fought on horseback. This beautiful, gentle, noble animal has been at our mercy since the beginning of history. But how much mercy have we shown them?
Welcome to the show, Elio.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you with us. I wonder if we can begin by your putting us in the picture as regards how the horse racing industry works. I know it's a cast of many players.
Well, the main players, apart from the horses, are the owners, the trainers, the jockeys, and then you've got the stable hands and the strappers. And pretty much they all work together to try to get the horse in, you know, peak condition so they can win money for them. The owners, obviously, are the ones that pay for the horse to be purchased with the hope that this horse will win. Fortunately, in about 98% of cases, these horses don't make enough money to cover their costs.
You can pay a lot of money for a thoroughbred racehorse, can't you? I mean, like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you can, and if you speak to anyone who's invested in a racehorse, they will tell you that they do it for the love of horse racing, not for the money. Okay. But it is a huge carrot that is dangled in front of them when they talk about horses like Maccabi Diva and Black Caviar and Winx that's now doing very well. And everybody wants a slice of that action. Mm. But unfortunately, these horses are few and far between.
Yes. Can you also clarify for us the various ways that we race horses? It's not all flat racing. What are the other ways?
Well, there's jumps racing, and that exists in New Zealand, as it does in Australia, but only in two states. In fact, it's been banned in other states of Australia. And in fact, if you ran a horse race in New South Wales, they'd actually charge you and you could end up in jail. That's how seriously they take jumps racing. And there's also harness racing. That is when you have a horse with a jockey in the back on a, I forget what it's called, they're called now, but harness racing is the third way that they race horses. Jumps racing is no doubt the most dangerous form of horse racing when they expect horses to run anywhere between 3 and 5 kilometres, run over and jump over 20 obstacles in the same race. It's really just waiting for an accident to happen. And it happens quite regularly. This year we've already seen 4 horses being killed here in Australia. Yeah. And that represents, I think it's about 2 or 3% of the horses that actually race have actually ended up dead on the racetrack. So it is a sad state of affairs for jumps racing, but also with flat racing. I know there aren't anywhere near as many racehorses in New Zealand as there are in Australia.
Yeah.
But there are, in Australia, there's approximately 120 to 130 horses that are killed on the racetrack.
Every year?
Every year we see between 120 and 130 racehorses killed. That's on the racetrack during an actual race.
Yeah.
And they'll put up the green screen and try and hide it from the general public. But also, in addition to these horses, many thousands of horses that will sustain injuries that will render them unable to compete further. And this is where they simply get disposed of, and most of them will end up in a knackery or slaughterhouse.
Yes, which is animal food.
That's right, for pet food. And in Australia, there are actually two abattoirs that kill them for human consumption, where they export them to countries like Japan and Russia and Italy and France.
This is the fate of pretty much all racehorses who haven't made enough money for their owners, is that right?
Well, it's actually not necessarily the horses that don't make it, because even the ones that do make it, once they're unable to compete further...
Or have been injured.
Yeah, it's been well documented, where horses have won millions of dollars and ended up at a slaughterhouse after being sold to a kill buyer at a sale yard. So that's quite common as well. Mm. And it also includes the horses that don't make it to the racetrack in the first place, because there are many horses, there's about 50% of racehorses that simply don't have the temperament for racing. So these horses are weeded out very early. We've seen evidence of foals being taken to the abattoirs, where there was a pen of 50-odd foals. And whilst we can't definitively say that they were racehorses, the only industry that produces horses in that great number is the racing industry. And it's a real shame, because, you know, we've been campaigning for a retirement plan for racehorses. We've our proposals on our website, horseracingkills.com. And basically that is saying to the racing industry that we think that every racehorse deserves the opportunity to live out the rest of their life.
Yes,
and they deserve a retirement plan.
So retirement plan is to live perhaps with company in fields so they can be free and there are no demands on them. They never have to run another race and live out their natural lifespan. But that would be quite expensive, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be very expensive. But if the racing industry also makes, like in Australia, they turn over $16.5 billion. And we think that if they put 1% of that betting turnover towards a retirement plan, that would raise $165 million, and that would go a long way to resolving a lot of these problems. The problem isn't just rehoming them. They actually have to be rehabilitated, because most of them are damaged goods after they've finished their racing careers. They can be very skittish, and they can be even aggressive. They can be very scared of even seeing a whip. I've experienced this personally myself with some of the racehorses that we've managed to rehome. And it takes quite some time. They need to be rehabilitated first. And we think what the industry needs to do is to create a market for these racehorses, to rehabilitate them, and then they're more likely to go to good homes. Otherwise, they're largely relying on volunteers, people who really care about them, rescuing these racehorses from sale yards where they know that they're otherwise going to be bought by a kill buyer and sent to the knackery. And it's not really their problem, it's the racing industry's problem, and they need to find a solution.
You mentioned that racehorses have a certain temperament. I've read some people say that racehorses are bred to race and they actually enjoy it. They enjoy the exertion, and if those animals are not allowed to race, they wouldn't be happy.
Well, that obviously comes from somebody from within the racing industry.
Yeah.
Any horse lover that knows anything about horses went to the races with an open mind and watched those horses, how much trouble they have actually getting them into the barrier, which is something that horses don't want to do. They actually have to be trained to go into the barrier. And often they can use stock whips on them to get them in there. Sometimes they blindfold them. They use all sorts of tactics to get them in there. And then these horses, if they love to race so much, why are they whipping these horses? The answer is that unless these horses have an incentive to run, they won't. They're running out of fear of being whipped. You just have to look at these horses, especially towards the end of a race, how desperately they're trying their hardest whilst they're even being whipped. Another factor to counter that argument is that 90% of racehorses suffer from bleeding in the lungs. Now, that is a condition caused by overexertion, and humans would suffer from that same condition if we forced ourselves to run beyond our physical limits.
Yeah.
We would eventually bleed in the lungs. Now, 90% of these racehorses suffer from this condition. Now, we don't suffer from it because we know we've been pushed too far. These horses aren't given the opportunity to slow down because they have a jockey on their back wielding a whip. And it's really an indictment on the racing industry that they claim that these horses love to race and yet they need a whip to make them race.
Close-up photography has revealed, as you say, horses absolutely exhausted and visibly bleeding from the nose. You see that, don't you, after a race?
Yeah, well, bleeding from the nose is a symptom of pulmonary bleeding, which is bleeding in the lungs, and it gets so bad that it comes out the nose. And when that happens in Australia on two occasions, the horse has to be retired, which often means they get a bullet to the head. Yeah, they don't all bleed from the lungs, but 90% of them suffer of some degree of pulmonary bleeding. It's really, you know, the industry, if they really care about these horses, they could ban the whip tomorrow and you'd still have a winner, a second place getter and a third place getter. Yeah. You'd still have horse racing. You'd make people a lot happier seeing that these horses are truly running on their own merits. But the racing industry is like an old dinosaur and they're very resistant to any kind of change.
I've been looking at some close-up photos of horses' faces as they go over a jump or in a steeplechase. And you can see the terror in their eyes. They're afraid of the jumps.
Yeah, well, they are. They're literally running for their lives. We had a horse just a couple of days ago was killed in South Australia in a jumps race. And it's not only the horses that fall and are killed on the racetrack, it's all those other horses that sustain injuries that fail to reappear. In Australia, in jumps races, 50% of racehorses disappear from one year to the next. So they don't race in either jumps races or flat race ever again. So they've got an attrition rate of 50%. Now, that's if that's not evidence that this is dangerous to horses, I don't know what is.
Yes. If we can just talk a little bit more now about the wider industry. I believe that it includes corruption, drugs, animal neglect, drowning of unwanted foals, animals sent to the slaughterhouse at a tiny fraction of their lifespan and so on. Can you just talk a little bit about that dark underbelly side of horse racing?
Yeah, well, it definitely has a very dark underbelly. And obviously, where you've got corruption, an animal's well-being is going to be compromised. Cobalt is a substance that's been used widely in Australia. You know, we've heard some trainers say, look, hey, everyone's using it. And they won't say it on record, but they go, you know, everyone's using it. They will do anything they can to make their horse win.
What's cobalt?
Cobalt's a substance that increases the oxygen levels in the blood, but it has some long and medium-term health issues with using cobalt. Horses often have a shorter career, but also they'll suffer long-term, not that many of them get to live out the rest of their lives. So, yeah, look, it's been banned. It's been considered to be performance-enhancing, and it has been banned, yet it apparently is being used very widely in horse racing. In terms of the horse's welfare, other issues, there's always going to be trainers and owners wanting to get their horse across the finish line. The one thing that they want to do is make the dollars. They'll say they love their horses, but if they love their horses, they wouldn't be sending them to the knackery after their racing careers are over. So pretty much they will do, you know, whatever they can to get their horse across the finish line.
This is an animal rights show, and I think I share the opinion of most animal rights activists that there is no way to fix horse racing and that it should be abolished. But I think you have a different point of view. Can you tell us how you see it?
Well, look, we think that the racing industry has been an institution in New Zealand and Australia for a couple of hundred years, and we can make the most headway in these times by trying to make the industry change, by trying to, four main campaigns are to have the whip banned, to have jumps racing banned, to have a retirement plan for racehorses, and to ban two-year-old racing. Now, there's a lot of work just in getting that done, and I have to say that there are a lot of people in our organisation that feel strongly that the racing industry should cease. Mm. We think that in the medium to long term, that the best that we can do is to push for change in the racing industry, and we are seeing some change. For example, with a rehoming program, we have been lobbying the racing industry for quite some time, and in the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen Victoria initiate a very small rehoming program. New South Wales has done so as well, and the other states are also looking at doing similar programs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some progress being made, and the racing industry knows that they're being watched, and that there are people out there that are not going to let them get away with what they've gotten away with for the last 200 years. And we also want to get the general public, the people that go to the races, we don't want them to turn against us. We want everyone to acknowledge that these racehorses deserve a life a lot better than what they're currently being given. And so that's why we're focusing on those four main issues.
So if you take away the whip in a race, you're going to get horses running much slower. Is that right?
They don't necessarily run much slower. Some horses actually, has been documented, will actually slow down when they're being whipped.
Okay.
So every horse is different. Some of them do react to the whip and others don't. I guess the main point about the whip is that it's a tool used to scare the horse into running faster. And this is why we see horses bleeding from the lungs due to overexertion. So it's a pretty simple remedy. You get rid of the whip and you let the horses run on their own merits. And if the race is like 10 seconds slower, 20 seconds slower, it'll actually mean that the jockey with the best horse that is able to communicate best with the horse will actually get the best result. There was a case in Western Australia a few months ago where a jockey, instead of whipping his horse, he actually kissed it on the neck. And that was his way of getting the best out of his horse. And he was actually brought before the stewards because they said that, you know, what are you doing? And he said, well, that's how I can get the best out of this horse.
Oh, that's lovely.
And so there are ways of getting the best out of your horse, and the best way is to have a good relationship with the horse, not one that is based on fear. And that is the case with most racehorses these days, because they have such a huge turnover of horses. I mean, the average racehorse's career is less than 3 years, so there's a huge turnover of horses, and they just try to get them racing and turn them over, and if they're no good, they're replaced. And it really is a sad state of affairs for the horses that compete. Racehorses just need the time to become horses again, not race horses. They need to be left possibly 12 months in the paddock, but it really varies from horse to horse as well. I had a horse that it took him probably the best part of 2 years before we felt that he was comfortable. Now he's the sweetest horse, and it just takes time. And unfortunately, they're quite damaged after their racing careers, and they need to be given the rehabilitation that, you know, to basically become normal horses again.
If you can bring about the changes you're advocating, will that mean racehorses will have a nice life, or will there still be some difficulties around the whole racing movement?
I think there's always going to be issues with horse racing. As you pointed out, it's very difficult to make something fundamentally unethical ethical. So there's always going to be issues with horse racing, but those issues are probably the main areas of concern.
Yeah,
I think that there will always be a drug problem, and trainers and jockeys will always find other means to trying to make their horses run faster, and most probably out of fear. Yeah, look, there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done before the industry does change its ways, but we're in it for the long haul, and we're confident that eventually the racing industry, under the pressure from the general public, will see that they need to change if they want to survive into the future.
Do you have a message for the general public?
Well, we ask anyone who's considered going to the races to become informed about the reality of horse racing, what these horses go through. And, I mean, you can just Google horse racing cruelty or go to our website, horseracingkills.com. You will soon find out that it is not a very pleasant experience for most racehorses. I won't say all racehorses. We actually know some owners and trainers that are supporting what we're doing and are aware of the cruelty, and they tell us categorically that they make sure that every single racehorse that they race goes to a good home. But it is a sad reality that for most racehorses, they live very short lives and often pay for it with their lives at the end. And you know, the general public needs to ask themselves, do they really want to support something that is essentially animal cruelty?
Yes. Elio, our time's just about up. I should have asked you this at the beginning, but what's your background that led you into this advocacy?
Look, I have always had an interest in animals. I've always cared for animals and got involved in animal rights after turning vegetarian many, many years ago. And there was a single phone call that we received about some horses that were in a paddock that looked like they were starving, and we investigated this paddock and we found out that this was a paddock attached to a knackery, and that most of these horses were racehorses. And because no one was doing anything about horse racing at the time, we decided it was time to start an organisation that specifically was going to fight for the rights of these horses that, you know, for a couple of hundred years have pretty much been at the mercy of their owners and trainers.
I see. It's quite often an incident like that that really makes someone like yourself decide to make a difference and do something meaningful for the animal. Look, thank you so much, Elio, and thank you for all that you're doing. If nothing else, you're doing a wonderful job of raising awareness, and that's a great website and Facebook page that you have, and I'll pop that on our own Facebook page with the link to this interview. So,
that'd be great.
Once again, Elio, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandra.
Take care. Bye-bye. Our thanks to Elio Salotto for speaking with us about the work of his organisation, horseracingkills.com. They're running four campaigns to improve the lot of racehorses. Ban the whip, have jumps racing banned, have a retirement plan for horse racing, and stopping two-year-old horses from being allowed to race. As Elio said, jumps racing is the deadliest form of horse racing, and SAFE have a campaign against jumps racing in this country. You can go to safe.org.nz/campaigns to read more about it. Elio mentioned about seeing a pen of foals at the slaughterhouse waiting their turn. What a heartbreak that must have been. But even when they reach adulthood, race horses typically live very short lives. 50% of race horses disappear off the circuit from one year to another in Australia, we heard Elio say. Where, I wonder, do they go? The animal exploitation industry works in the shadows and it covers up the unpalatable truth. The greyhound racing industry is another horror story. Sometimes I think we'll never be able to atone for the wrongs that we've done our fellow creatures. But we can try. Okay, we'll go out on one of my favourite songs about horses, Wildfire by Michael Murphy. Bye everyone, go well, see you next week. And the pony she named Wildfire.